Welcome, folks, to our September morning supervision support call. Lovely to see you here. So if anyone is watching this call for the first time, we've just had a class graduate this week, which is wonderful. Lorraine, welcome to our little call. This is very cool to see you, as part of that class. And the way that this works is that you can bring anything that you want to this call, and we will figure it out. Oh, here's some extra people joining in. Hey, everyone. So the way that this works is that you can bring anything you like to this call. It is an opportunity to be coached by me, to receive coaching. Right, to get support. This thing that we do, right? We find it hard to ask for support. So you can bring anything you like. My approach to this is that this whole coaching support supervision type work is very relational, and it's context specific. So you can bring something that's related to you personally as a human. You can bring something that's about your business that you want some support on, or some idea generation, or whatever that looks like. And you can also bring anything that's going on between you and your clients. So a lot of the work that we do here is about noticing our own entanglement patterns, and just being aware of that and looking at what might be going on there. So, that's the purpose of this call. As you are kind of integrating your SBCA tools into your practice, using it in whatever way feels good to you and for your clients, that you have this opportunity to get support on a monthly basis. It is agenda free. So you can basically just stick your hand up and say you want support, and we just take it in turns. And if nobody wants support, we have a really short call. So if you know you want some help today, please just let me know in the chat, and we'll just take people in order. And I'm not kidding about it being a short call if no one brings anything. who had something they're not wanting to go first? Come on, yay, good stuff.
Hi, good to be back. I think I was actually needing to be back more than anything. I had a very specific question last week, and I wish I'd wrote it down because it's now gone out of my head. So this might just be a bit waffly. I think I'm just in that point where I haven't submitted my work for certification. And obviously the longer I'm leaving it, the more the feelings are coming up, like, oh, it's getting too hard. So like, let's just ignore it now. So maybe I think this morning I just need some help to get back into that learning brain and learning process, and wonder maybe if you had some tips to break it down. I think I'm going to write the essay, and I haven't really worked out what to write around, and I'm also having a lot of doubts/issues with having enough calls to pick anything that's been, you know, to record that submitted recording. So maybe that's it in a kind of roundabout bloody way.
Love it. So what I'm hearing is you want to certify and you're working through the process, and that's bringing up some doubts. And the temptation is to just go, who cares?
Yeah.
So it sounds like there is like a practical element to this, like just logging your hours. Or have you logged your hours and it's just finding a call to record?
No, I don't have enough hours.
Okay. Cool. Okay. So we've got 20 hours. And that can be paid or unpaid. Right? We don't care. And there's a 30-minute recording just of you just coaching someone using SBCA tools. And there is either a 2000 word essay, or if you prefer to talk, a 20 minute presentation on a topic of your choice. What is the thing that's holding you back? Like when you see that, that's the criteria for certification, what comes up for you?
Okay, so at first it was the essay, because there's a lot of like school stuff around my ability to write essays, etc. But I'm working through that, and actually it's not scaring me that much. I can work my way through it. I think a lot of it's around not reaching that 20 hours, and it sounds ridiculous because it's only 20 hours, but I'm really struggling with that part. And I've offered free sessions and nobody's come back to me, and I'm thinking like, I think the more that I've offered free sessions and paid sessions, low paid sessions and like normal price sessions, and because I've tried like all options and nobody's come back to me, it's really starting to make me think,
right,
like, is it me? Is there something, am I not offering it properly? Am I not being, I don't know, clear enough in my what I'm asking for or what I'm offering? And it's just bringing up everything, and it's just okay. it's just made me kind of pull on the brakes and go, well, this is just too hard for me, I can't do this.
Okay, so what if we would it help to focus a bit on that, on the getting the 20 hours?
Probably, yes. I think
does that feel like the area that would be,
yeah, because I think if I can't work out the, like, my theme or the topic around the essay, right, and I think I can go to the pod and ask for some help in that, or maybe bring it up here next month. I can work my way through that. I think my priority at the moment is trying to get these hours in and banked.
Okay, perfect. And so how many have you got already?
Around 12.
12. So we're actually even talking about 8 hours.
Yeah,
way less than 20. Yeah. You're already way over halfway.
So difficult.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, tell me about your approach. How are you doing this?
I have already sent out in my mailing list numerous times. It's not just like a random sporadic thing. I have sent out, like, I send out a weekly email. And right over the summer, I was saying, like, you can sign up to this one-off session. I was, thank you, Katie. I was offering a one-hour session for free. Then I was offering the 90-minute one-off session as like a lower-priced special offer if you sign up over the summer, because I had limited sessions. And then I was trying to do it as like, well, you've got until, I think it was like the end of August, and then from September onwards it's going to be my regular price, so like take the deal while you can type thing,
right? Sure.
There's, I don't know, maybe my approach was wrong, but I really thought like the offering it for free, people would just be like, oh yeah, let's try this out. And then I really thought that offering something at like 50 quid, here you can have my time for 50 quid, and nobody jumped at it. So I think my ego is a bit knocked.
Well, so what I just really want to acknowledge is this is awesome experimentation that you're doing here, right? I think, like, and we downplay that because actually when you experiment, you're just trying things out to see what happens. And the idea is you're not really looking for a specific outcome. You're seeing what happens. Because what if three of those things had worked, right? If three of those things had got you clients, then you probably, we wouldn't be talking about it being terrible. We'd be talking about amazing, it's all worked, right? But the experiment has worked in that you've tried different things. That's going to serve you really well. So one of the things that strikes me is your client group remind me, I'm assuming that I know, but just remind me, who are the people that you're aiming this at? Who are the folks on your newsletter list?
In terms of who the people that I'm trying to work with. Yeah.
How would you describe them?
Okay, so like they are women who feel like they've lost themselves, they're looking to gain some clarity, looking for like control of their situation that they're maybe going through, just to sort of strengthen that self-trust and self-belief and get clear on like next steps and things.
Yep.
Kind of ditch some expectations around.
Yeah. Are they mostly parents?
Not necessarily.
Okay. Is summer a busy time for them or a time where they might be not focused on self-development?
It could have been. I feel like there was a lot of busyness over the summer in general with everybody. I think this summer was a summer that everybody started doing the holidays abroad and, you know, just generally getting out there. So it did feel very busy over the summer. And it was certainly busy for myself, you know, with two kids at home for the summer holidays.
Right. So busy summer. I'm just looking at why they wouldn't have signed up. That has nothing to do with you.
Okay.
It's a busy summer. Why else wouldn't they have signed up?
They're just not interested.
Yep. What else?
They don't get it.
Right?
Or they don't see what the point of it is.
Yeah. Like it's confusing the value to them.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're folks with a lot of self-doubt, right, which is what you're describing, then, because that's what they're looking for, one of the things I found is they doubt that they're worthy of their own investment. That's a massive barrier. And I know you've offered it for free, but it's not just about the investment in money, it's time as well.
Mm-hmm. I did try to make it clear, though, that they could sort of book this, especially when I was doing the offer of like 50 quid. I was like, you can book it now.
Yeah.
But you've still got until, I can't remember if I said the end of September or the end of October. I think it was the end of September. It says you've got until the 30th of September to actually like get it in the diary. So they had the September to get back. But then I don't know, maybe I just started confusing things too much.
Maybe, yep. It's when it's not clear, it's hard to say yes, right? So there might be some like don't get it or just feel confused. I think as well, we underestimate how courageous it is to say I'm a bit lost and I'm not in love with my life.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like our clients before they're working with us are often in a place where they don't really like either themselves or their lives, and they don't really know how to change that. And they dismiss that experience as well, right? So it's like I'm judging and dismissing it because it's worse for other people, or it's not really that bad, or I had a pretty good day, so maybe I'm just making this up. Like, we're very good at justifying reasons not to get vulnerable, right?
Yeah, I'm just going to write some of this down.
Yeah, I'm going to take a photo of this as well for you, Yvonne. Mm-hmm. So we justify not liking our lives. So I'm sketching this out, and I think this is super helpful for folks watching as well, because part of our job, I think, is to help our clients feel safe that this is totally normal, that you've got them, that it's okay, this is normal, this is okay to feel these things, and you can support them to make a shift, make a change. So I guess I'm just curious to know, has any of this stuff come up in the way you've been making the offer? Like, have you been talking about all the reasons why, where the client might be right now, or where your potential clients might be right now?
Do you mean like putting that in my content as the reasons, like to counteract the reasons?
Not even to counteract it, just to kind of acknowledge this might be where they are.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not sure actually. I would need to read back.
Yeah. Well, and even just going, oh, okay, I could start to talk about this now, right? Mm-hmm. That part of our work, I think, is to be able to say, you know, this is the reality of being a human, right? Nothing's gone wrong. We're just having human thoughts and beliefs. And, you know, when we feel a bit overwhelmed by not just our immediate lives, but also the world at large, it can feel hard to say, I'm going to take some time out and get vulnerable with someone and talk about all the things. They may have, you know, other things. They may have pre-prejudice ideas about what coaching is. They may not really understand what coaching is. They may not kind of believe that it's for them. Am I the sort of person that has a coach, right? Like all of those things, right? So it might be, Yvonne, that part of the invitation here, right? Because what can happen is when we are experimenting, particularly and our clients are involved and our business is involved, we then get entangled with our clients when they don't do what we want them to do. And right, and much the same way that when we're getting entangled with our clients in sessions, we kind of evaluate that, like we do the SOAP, you do the SOAP evaluation, and just kind of get a sense of, okay, objectively, what went well, what didn't go well, subjectively, what was that like? You know, we're really just evaluating, we're looking at what's going on, because if we don't do that, then the entanglement becomes the truth, right? So the same thing can happen in our businesses where we get entangled in with our clients and decide it's something to do with us, or we're not meant for this, or the universe is giving us a sign, when actually we might just need to do some evaluations and look at, okay, so if we take away all the unhelpful beliefs that you're experiencing and look at objectively, where is my client at and what might she need to know, and how can I talk to her in a way that helps her feel safe? How can I educate her about what happens in a coaching session? How can I express to her what the value is of this work? How can I let her know that I understand where she's coming from right now, where she's at, and that that's totally okay? How's that landing for you, Yvonne?
Yeah, I feel like I've worked a lot on like my messaging and the way I write, and I've managed to keep consistent with a weekly email for the last, I don't know, 7 or 8 months, which I'm really proud of. So I'm feeling like I'm making progress in my own, which is helping a lot with the whole like stories of I can't write, you can't write, you don't know how to write, which, so that's been helpful, just even as a learning process for me. So I feel like I'm taking things on board, as much as, okay, it might not be landing yet,
I'm still making
progress. Yeah. It's just really frustrating because every time I feel like I've like, oh yeah, I've got it, I know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I feel like it comes across and I feel like I'm connecting, because like I have a tiny list, but I have a good open rate. So I know people are reading. I'm just not getting them over the line to the next stage.
Yeah.
And I don't have an issue with like showing that I need to be better organized at, you know, how often I show up. I don't have an issue with showing up. I just want to be able to get really clear on what I want to say and making sure that it lands in the right way with them.
And, you know, I wonder if, because sometimes what can happen is we kind of overthink it, right? To the point where we want it to get it right. And right means someone buys, right? And what I would offer is do this in a way where you get to be a human and you're talking to someone who is also a human.
Mm-hmm.
And so just noticing all of these things are very human reasons why people don't buy it, that have nothing to do with the quality of your coaching work or the value of it. And it's really about you being able to reach into your client's world and say, oh, I see you. I get where you're at. Yeah, man, that happens so many times. I understand. Here's what I can do to help. And I think also like the practicalities of this is just on the stats of, and I know none of us love this word, but conversion rate is still, and it's not changed in over 10 years, 1-2%. 1-2% of people will buy, right?
Yeah.
So it sounds to me like you to have that open rate, to have already clocked your you know, over half of the hours, this is going really well, right? It's like, now how do you build on that? How do you get that momentum, you know?
Yeah.
So I would just offer, like, even just brainstorming some ideas for yourself around how can I talk about my coaching work and the value of it to my client in a way that feels really human and easy, as if I was talking to a girlfriend kind of thing. Now, if a girlfriend came to you and said, oh, I just really want to talk through this thing and it's a bit of a nightmare and, oh, who cares, let's just go for a drink, right? Because that's what we do as humans when we aren't in our world, in coaching world. And you said, hey, I know another way you can do this. You could talk to my mate, Yvonne, who's a coach, right? We're role-playing at this point. And this is what happens when you talk to a coach. And you can still go out for a drink and try and forget it. But the thing isn't going away, right? So maybe give this a go.
Mm-hmm.
It's that human-to-human conversation, whatever that looks like for you. Mm-hmm. That's where people feel safe.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm not quite connected enough.
I think it sounds to me like you are putting in place these beautiful habits and routines for your business. And that is a massive part of building trust, right? Mm-hmm. When people know that you're predictable, right? It's like, oh, I know I'm going to get my newsletter from Yvonne on a Wednesday, and it's always interesting. That's why you've got high open rates, right? And so part of this is about just building on that and going a bit deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Going into the nitty gritty stuff.
Okay.
And I would also offer everyone, one of the things you could do is come up with a list of beliefs that really help you to write in that way. Right? Like it's safe for me to talk to my potential clients as if they were a friend.
Yeah. Well, I try to do that in my weekly letter. It's called A Letter to My Sister. So I try to,
cool.
to write that in that way. So it's more personal. And I do sort of go into stuff that's maybe like on my mind, that kind of thing. So I'm trying to get to that point where it's relatable to who I'm talking to. And then my monthly one's just like a general newsletter. So that's why I was really keen to make a weekly thing. So I kept up that momentum and kept my own accountability to be writing in that way. But perhaps I just need to make some tweaks.
Well, and I would also offer, are you working with a coach right now?
No.
And I honestly think this is something we need to get better at, right? Because there is sometimes a disconnect when we're going on about how great coaching is and how we can help, but we don't invest in that in ourselves in whatever way that looks, right? Like it doesn't have to be a paid thing, right? It could be a peer relationship. It can come in many forms, is what I'm saying.
Well, we've still got our practice pod going. I think that's another thing too, because I'm trying to disconnect from the fact that I can't afford a coach right now, but trying to keep in my head that there's plenty of people out there who can afford a coach right now. So it's hard not to get into, you know, that whole like, oh, people aren't spending money at the minute, because I know that they are. Maybe if I had more clients, I would be able to afford a coach right now.
Exactly. But part of this, I think, is just about you like really believing in your offer, mm-hmm. really believing in how you help people, and being willing to get into that grittier side of it so that your clients get that you get them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Does that help you?
Yeah, I'm going to.
And you've only got eight hours to go.
Yeah.
That could be one client over the next 4 months.
Well, see, that's the thing. It's like it's only 8 hours, but because this has been since before the summer, it feels like this 8 hours is stretching into 80 hours. Like that's what this 8 hours is suddenly feeling like. Because I'm suddenly thinking, well, like, where did they all go?
And I guess this is the thing, if you're depending on the size of your list, you may have exhausted the people that are willing to pay for coaching. Mm-hmm. So growing the list is also the part of the part of running the business, isn't it?
I'm on that as well.
Cool. So I don't know, I just think this is about perseverance. It's about what you're believing about your offer. And kind of detaching from those unhelpful reasons why your clients may not be buying. Yeah. You could also ask them, I want to provide you with really helpful stuff, really helpful info. I'm curious to know why you're on my list. And it's like, because I want to work with you in the future, and that's worth a conversation, mm-hmm. right? If people are ticking that box, that's worth a conversation.
Okay, maybe be more direct.
Right? Yeah, it's all an experiment.
Yeah.
Great questions, Yvonne. I really love it. Yeah. Nice work. Thank you so much for asking. I saw someone else. Maria. Hi, love.
Hello. So I've got a question about perceived risks when they're actually like real risks. So to kind of give you context, I'm working with a lot of kids who are doing public exams next summer, and you know, their self-doubt's obviously getting activated and keeping them stuck and in procrastination and not getting on with revision and all that sort of thing. And obviously their self-doubt is, you know, the risk, the perceived risk that it's protecting them from, like failure, judgment, disappointment, success, you know, they are all real risks. So I've been doing with them, you know, the kind of life map and going back and finding where some of those self-doubt stories formed and doing the kind of what else could be true about that. And we've been doing some experiments and gathering evidence to disprove the narratives they're telling themselves. But I just wondered if you had any other tricks, pick your brains for any other tools, because I have one boy at the moment who is, well, it's really tricky for him because he's got a twin brother who's a total genius And it all comes really easy to him. They're very, very different. In fact, his mum told me he was a twin. He didn't disclose that to me till about our third or fourth session. Yeah, I actually have a twin brother. They don't really get on that. I think they like each other, but they're very, very different. And he also goes to a very, very high achieving, fee paying school, where the story that they're being told is, you know, these grades are everything. And that, you know, his mum described him to me as, you know, he's not, the school is very stick and he is carrots, like completely. So he's just, and it's really hard because he's really bright in some areas, but other areas he struggles. And he, but at a normal school, he would be, you know, above, he'd be very high achieving. It's just that this school is, you have to take an exam to get in it. It's really high pressured. So that with the pressure and everything, he's struggling. He's making some progress with kind of experimenting and trying some revision strategies and getting some results. But he often kind of defaults to, well, I think his sort of risk is complexity. Right. It's too hard, there's too many things, and I, you know, and he also has a very kind of time, you know, scarcity mindset as well. He loves rugby and doing lots of other things that he doesn't want to give up, and I never ever I actively discourage them from giving up any of their extra stuff that they love. So it's just what he, you know, sometimes he will kind of say, well, that won't work for me, you know, the nice sort of stuff, that won't work for me. So I'm just sort of wondering if you had any other things for people who, yeah, when that perceived risk, when the self-doubt's activated and the perceived risk is very, very real, and they are getting messages. So he's getting messages from his teacher saying, if you don't, so for example, you can take triple science, that's what the high achieving kids do, and the ones that struggle with science have to do just two GCSEs. And he's been told at the moment, you know, if this carries on, you will only be able to do two. Now, in the wider scheme of things, it doesn't really matter, but to him that's a really big deal. So he's been told, feeding this message is, you're failing and you're not getting to sixth form if you don't get these. So it's that risk is very, very real, and keeping him stuck. So I was just wondering if you had any other.
Yeah. So a couple of things, I guess. One is that makes me feel really activated. Like, I just want to take this boy and put him in a school that will love him for who he is.
I know.
Like, can I just offer that? Like, and I wonder if that's coming up for you too.
It really is.
He sounds like a square peg in a round hole.
He really is. And he wants to stay in sick form. And I'm just like, do you know what? Get the hell out. I haven't said that to him. Obviously, I want to be professional, but I'm like, get the hell out of there and go to a lovely college that, you know, because he loves English and he's really creative and sporty. And I'm like, go somewhere where science and maths isn't everything.
So I guess one of the things I would offer is, and it may be helpful just to have this conversation with him and maybe his parents as well, right? But is about, why are you here? Like, actually go into that vision for your life piece of self-belief and sovereignty. Like, what is the point of this for you? Because if it's just to kind of get through to sixth form, it's kind of like, can we play the sixth form game? If it's, we want our kid to be set up for life or for the career and the path that he is going to thrive on, then it might be we solve a different problem. But I think part of this can be about actually tapping into who he is rather than what the school is saying. Because it feels like all the kind of value and the rightness is going to what the school is saying.
And she rather said than they his... they had a meeting and she said that the head of the year was sort of saying all the right things, but very last thing she said, you know, and we're here to support you. And she told the head of year about me. And they was, and she said, well, you know, we have people like that who can work with you in school. And the mum was like, but I think that's the problem, is it won't work in school. He has to talk to somebody out of it because he's in the school environment and it's not. And she said, okay, fine. And then, you know, it was really encouraging. And then she said, the last thing she said to him as he walked out the door was, you know, because if you don't get this, this and this grade, you know, you won't be coming back to sixth form. And that was how she finished it. And she was like, ah.
God,
you're doing so well, and that's what you've left him with, is that.
Well, and I guess this is partly about, I think, the limits of coaching, right? Is that, and I see this a lot when I work with people who are in organizations, where they can walk out of a session feeling super full of belief and, you know, really ready to do the thing that they want to do. And they walk into the organizational culture, which is so at odds with what they care about. Yeah. It's only a matter of time before they leave, right? Is usually the case.
Yeah.
So it may be that it's worth having that conversation with his parents and saying, like, there is nothing wrong with your child. Your child is amazing and he is gifted and he has a whole way of seeing the world that does not fit this environment.
Mm-hmm.
So you can make a, the parents can make a different choice here.
Yeah.
That might solve the right problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it might be about giving him a bit of autonomy. Well, where do you want to go to sixth form?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So I think there's partly it's like, let's not ignore the elephant in the room, which is that this child is being bashed into shape and he's a square peg in a round hole. Mm. And he can work very, very hard to be as round as you like.
Yeah. Yeah,
because there's something about for me, like, what does that do to his spirit, you know?
Absolutely, because their demands aren't going to change when he's doing A levels, it will get worse, you know. Because A levels are harder and more demanding, and
I guess, you know, part of this is also just the other part of your question was, you know, what do we do when the risks are real? And I think, well, the risks are always real, it's our perception of them, right? Our perception of them can be disproportionate, and that usually tells me that the fear of the risk occurring is driven by that protector, which is always a disproportionate kind of risk, you know. And you know this because it's like, I can't post this thing on Instagram because I will die, right? It feels like it's like, okay, so that's a disproportionate response kind of thing. Or if I say no to this person, they will never speak to me again.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of disproportionate response. But when it's a like, oh my goodness, like, why would we not acknowledge that these risks are very real? That actually he's in quite a binary context right now where you pass or you fail.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for me, it's like for any situation where the risk is also valid, part of this is about How do we be with that reality?
Yeah.
Right? Like, can you just feel your feelings around that?
Mm-hmm.
Can he voice what he actually wants here?
Mm-hmm.
Can we, you know, because we try to avoid any of those difficult emotions, but actually sometimes failure happens and it feels a bit crap. But can you just feel it? Because as soon as you start to be okay with that, it means the next time it happens, you've got a little bit more flexibility around it. It's like, oh yeah, that didn't go to plan. It's not a failure of me and what I make that mean about me. It's this didn't go to plan. It's a different kind of response. So it's more for me about how real and valid is the risk, and how real and valid is what do we make that risk mean?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so it's back to meaning making, isn't it? But in an anticipating kind of way. Yeah.
But from everything you've said, Maria, it's like if he was in a different environment, this conversation would not be happening.
No.
And that just always makes me feel like, well, that's a really easy, well, it's a relatively simple problem to solve.
Yeah. That's it, because he's, you know, it's and I think there's a lot of layers of complexity with it, having a twin as well, and having a twin in that is so,
and those expectations around
him
and his sibling.
How
do you feel about having that conversation with his parents?
Very well, actually, very good. His mum is, she kind of would agree with all of that. But he is saying he wants to stay there. You know, she would obviously wouldn't move him this year, but he is saying he wants to stay there. So it's she's in a very tricky position. So that's why she's brought me in, you know, and somebody from outside the school, because she agrees with all of the things about him, it not being the right place for him, you know. And you know, they kind of made a mistake, I guess, in their judgment of sending him there. But it's tricky if his brother's, you know, it's very tricky. So I would be I would be happy to have that conversation with her and sort of talk to her about, you know, how can, you know, is there any way I can support you to have some, well, what will happen if you don't get into sick form? Because I don't actually think that will be a bad thing at all. I think it's actually something that could be a blessing in disguise for you, because you're going to, it's going to give you some freedom.
I also think
from this place.
For him, it may be helpful for him to have some clear like role models as well, like who is other people that he looks up to, and kind of what advice would they give him in this situation? If he's a rugby player, like he it could be really supportive for him to maybe read some biographies of rugby players who have lost big games and all of that jazz, and they always will speak afterwards about how, you know, they learned that perspective and all of that jazz. So I think there's some opportunities there just to be in the, you know, be in it with him. Look at, you know, who does he look up to and how can they support him in his own mind? You know, he could create a little team in his head that are rooting for him.
I love that. Thank you very much. That's really helpful.
So welcome. Thank you. So fun, the work you do. I love it.
I know, I do love it too.
Really cool. Lorraine, did you have a follow-on question? Please go ahead.
Well, it was just when Maria was talking, it just reminded me of a client I was speaking to the other night, just this whole idea about sort of the perceived risk and things. So I'm a financial coach, and one thing that came out of our session was that she's afraid that if she does get a grip on her money, which is what she says her goal is that she's going to be boring, because boring people have a grip on their money and things. So that just kind of came out towards the end of the session. And it's just, there was just something when you were talking, Maria, about, you know, just about the, you know, that's her risk. And I just wonder, any tips on how to take that at the next session? Because I just feel as if, you know, we've come up with lots of different actions and the easy and this and that, I can do this, but that's her belief, I guess. So maybe maybe that's the answer. Maybe that should just need to go in there and really, really unpick that. But
well, yeah, and, really, and I would also offer looking at the criticism map can be a way of seeing the benefits of being boring.
Okay.
Right, because with the criticism map, we look at, well, what's good about this, what's not great about it, but also what are the, it's like trying to elicit the hidden benefits of something that we might be criticizing ourselves for.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
It can be a bit of a head fuck, because you start to go, oh, hang on, this thing that I definitely don't want to be part of me, I can see I actually do. So
it's just how to you know, I think it's so embedded, it's just how do you kind of get her to, you know, just really see, she sees it on one level but not really deep down.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a very common fear for folks, and it's like the fear of success, right? If I become successful, I'll be boring, or I won't be like my people, all that kind of stuff. I found working with a few clients over the years who were on a sobriety journey, because that's part of my story. And so they'd sought out a coach around getting support for that. And that was a big one for them too. Mm. If I'm no longer the life of the party, I'll be so dull, right? Mm. And actually what you find is over time, boring actually equals peace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, thank you. I'll look then.
Yeah, you're really welcome. Beautiful. Anyone else want to stick their hand up? How are you all doing with coaches, with clients right now in this context of the collapse of government? I guess I just want to share, like, conversations I'm having with clients are that there's a lot of people that are really struggling right now, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how that kind of starts to shift and change our work too, right? Like, we're actually you know, there's a few different ways that can go, but I think that there is there's some real hardship out there, and not just actual hardship as well, there is the kind of like fear that that it might get harder. I'm just seeing quite a lot of those kinds of conversations going on. And because there is always polarity, I'm also seeing a lot of folks who are really getting back to what matters to me about this work, and what, particularly coaches, what matters to me about this work, how do I want to show up to this, how can I be more flexible, all of that kind of thing. I was talking to a really long-standing coach the other day. We just met for a Zoom coffee, and she was saying that she's totally changing her pricing structure, and she is now going to do a completely pay what you can business. And just how she's doing that, I just found that really fascinating, that she was like, this is what I'm going to do. And she is now like coaching a whole range of different people. So she works with leaders, and she does some work for the Refugee Council. It's like she gets that huge variety. So for her, it was, I'm doing pay what you can because that feels like a real values shift for me. Like, it's such a beautiful way of honoring that value of being accessible. But she said the unexpected benefit of doing that is that she's just getting this huge like variety of clients that she gets to work with. And this is the thing, I think in times when hardship is more visible to more of us, I think what can happen is we go, oh, that's it, and we kind of curl in. And I would just say this can actually mean that the demand for our work increases. It just might come from different places. And it may be that the nature of the work can shift. And it also might mean that the nature of the way we respond to that can shift, right? How we price for that, how we build that in. I think the part of it is just about being willing to experiment, as Yvonne's doing so beautifully, being willing to, just be consistent and be persistent, and also really creative in the way we respond to it. So yeah, just wanted to offer that for folks who might be feeling a bit like, oh, it's a lot right now. It's like, yep, it is. And also there might be ways through that we're not thinking about. Anyone else want to share anything before we close? All good. Yeah, Helen.
Just really, from what Maria was saying, I've got a really interesting coaching client who is late 20s, who I guess is kind of on the other side of the case that you bought in terms of the school narrative that kind of she lived through, that actually resulted in her becoming an elective mute because of the pressure and because of all those different things. And the conversations we're subsequently having actually about how the system was actually, when we look at what else is true, this was a system. There's some non-neurotypical stuff going on for her as well, that, you know, this was an education system that just didn't fit.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't that she didn't fit the system, it's the system wasn't made for her. And so none of this was her fault. It wasn't that she didn't fit. And it's just been very, very interesting. And when you were talking, I was just like, oh, this sounds like, you know, this sounds like my client, you know, in kind of, 10, 15 years time. And I just wanted to share that it's just really interesting that, what can we do? How can we intervene, earlier, it's great that she's found me and that we're having those conversations, but yes, she's had a really tough time. So yeah, just wanted to.
What a totally sophisticated protector as well, to decide not to speak. That is incredible. Yeah. Thanks for sharing, Helen. Cool. Hey, lovely people. Go forth, be awesome. We'll see you next month. Yeah. Okay. Take care. See you.
Thanks, Sass. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.